So I'm recording now, and Drew, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Pablo. You know, for the sake of the listeners, we could do this in Spanish, but I don't think they'd appreciate my thick accent, so we'll stick with English for the
most of them. Probably wouldn't, but you never know.
I will say, like, when I text, I sound like baller in Spanish, but it's just because I can always, like, Google a word if I don't quite know what to say.
Right. You can always just Google Translate.
Right. That doesn't work in the real world quite yet, but
not soon. Soon, I'm sure.
So, for those that might wonder, Pablo and I worked together for a couple of years in New York City a couple of years ago. And, you know, we hung out, we had fun hanging out. And so a little about me. My name's Drew. I'm 34 years old, single, living in Phoenix, Arizona now, working at an accounting and consulting firm. I've kind of done that type of work for about 10 years. From the Chicago area originally, grew up in the suburbs. So sort of if you know those 1980s John Hughes Chicago suburbs movies like Ferris Bueller and Risky Business, pretty impactful. That was kind of, you know, where I grew up. Not quite the North Shore money, but that scene. And I love Chicago's, especially with the winter, is a pretty brutal place, but I love getting there in the summer, and it's a gorgeous city. I mean,
I never realized that Chicago actually has a much, much harsher winter than New York City.
Oh, big time, yeah. I mean, New York's cold in the winter, Chicago's harsh. You know, that's a big difference.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I moved here, and then everyone's telling me, oh, just be glad it's not Chicago.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just, you know, I'd imagine the ocean in New York just kind of keeps things relatively mild.
Well, God bless that ocean. So wait, so you're actually from the New York area?
No, grew up in the Chicago area.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
So I grew up in the western suburbs, a city called Naperville, pretty big suburb, about the third or fourth biggest city in the state. And, you know, growing up, pretty much every year, CNN would call Naperville the best place in America to raise a family. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of that movie Pleasantville with Tobey Maguire from way back. Yep. But there's a lot of it that's true. I mean, the public schools were excellent. There was no crime. There was a downtown area that was pretty fun. A lot of sports leagues, a lot of arts. So, you know, it's so trendy to, like, rip suburbia and think, oh, it's just, you know, but it was cool. I had a lot of fun during childhood. I could ride my bike. My parents didn't have to worry I'd be getting in trouble or anything. But, you know, as I'm saying this, I'm very aware that, like, there was a really powerful article written a couple of years ago by an African-American man about, like, here's what it's like to be black growing up in Naperville. You know, he said he'd, like, always get pulled over by the police for no reason at all. He was like an honor student, but they still, you know, just
racial profiling.
Right. It's not the out and out racism because, you know, it's not the Deep South in the 1960s or anything, but it's that subtler form, you know? But yeah, so I grew up in a great town, kind of the youngest of three. You know, I was very fortunate. You know, parents are college educated. Parents are still married. That's kind of a big factor in having a great life.
Right.
You know, parents went to every sporting event with me, helped me with homework and all that. I'd say what certainly made my life unique growing up is the youngest of three. You know, the oldest was kind of, you know, future valedictorian, Harvard and all that. But the middle, who was, you know, there was 5 years between the oldest and me. Aaron was the oldest. And the middle one, 2 years older than me, Lindsay, she had Down syndrome. And, you know, it didn't severely affect the day-to-day life. I mean, she went to similar schools to me. You know, she had a one-on-one aide with her. She had her bowling league and her dance class. So, you know, day to day, we had, you know, it was not a, you know, the families who have the children with severe special needs that need to be monitored all the time, you know, that sounds pretty interesting. So this was, you know, Lindsay could be left alone in the basement and watch TV and it was all good. So, you know, it was, I certainly think it was, you know, it was very stressful for my parents. You know, my mom had to work some to get some money, but also had to raise three kids. And Lindsay had four heart surgeries when she was younger. So, yeah, that was tough. But things were pretty normal until, the summer of 1999, you know, everything was normal. And then, you know, Lindsay had to go to the hospital for a few days. She wasn't feeling well, but then they were about to release her. But then, you know, out of nowhere, on like a Saturday morning in June of 99, Lindsay passed away. It was, they called it sudden kidney failure.
Oh, wow.
And most people with Down syndrome live into their 30s or 40s or longer. You know, this was all very unexpected. It was a, you know, Saturday morning. I was at a swim meet in the neighborhood. My parents were there, even though Lindsay was at the hospital, because, you know, it was all, everything was normal and they were going to go get her in a couple hours.
Right.
Leave suddenly because her condition got worse. A neighbor drove me home. I was upstairs. And, you know, my parents and my other sister came in the house and they said, you know, you need to come downstairs. And I instantly knew something was wrong. You know, they'd never, that's just not how we rolled. If they came in, we would just say hi from upstairs or whatever and go about our way. So she passed away that day. And then my sister Erin went to college a couple months later. So that was kind of one difference starting eighth grade. Yeah, eighth grade, becoming kind of only child right away. But, you know, we'd been in Naperville for so long. We had a strong support network, a strong church network supporting us. You know, I can't ever fathom what it's like to lose a child, but I think at least, you know, we had a very strong support system around us and that made a huge difference.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And one, I'm very sorry to hear that, right? That's got to be a tough loss. And two, how do you think that that event drove to who you are today? Like, how did that affect you moving forward?
You know, I think about that a lot. I mean, I think one, it's like, it's weird. It's like, they'll be, you know, I'd say I get sad about it maybe one or two days a year. I think one thing that's surprising now is like, and my sister's married with kids. It does surprise me, like over the last 8 years, 10 years, like her name doesn't get mentioned a lot. Maybe it's just sort of awkward for anyone to bring up. You know, her photos are, of course, still around the house, but it's just,
right.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, how do you, I don't know what other people do. Like, do they still talk about people that passed away 20 years ago? Maybe less and less as the years go on. As terms of how it affected me, you know, I'd just say the biggest thing is, what's the best way to put it? I really do love hanging out with people, but once I get to a point where the gas tank runs empty, like I'm always the first one to leave a party and go home and chill by myself. And you know, maybe that kind of happened there when I went from being like the youngest of three to an only child, where I do, that is something that's just, you know, I don't love that trait about me, but it is, it's just how it is for whatever reason. Like I always after, you know, I don't feel comfortable hanging around in groups for too long. You know, Pablo knows I love texting people. I love doing a lot of one-on-one stuff, but I am someone who sort of like runs out of social fuel fairly quickly and just kind of likes to be on my own. You know, that's kind of been like that a lot.
No, it's funny that you say that because I've been very fortunate for most of my life to not have to have experienced death. Mm-hmm. Until last year, and I will, it was a roller coaster of emotions last year because a good buddy of mine, his sister passed, and while I wasn't close to her, I was close to him, right?
So right.
It affected me a little bit. And then literally just a month or two later, or maybe a little bit longer, one of our mutual best friends decided to take his life. Mm-hmm. And you know, there was a mourning period, right, where you are sad and you think about the memories and all that good stuff. But moving past that, the way we, at least in my circle, have dealt with that is just talking about him as if he was still here almost. Mm-hmm. And acknowledging that, oh man, if Chris was here, you know, he would be blackout drunk right now with us, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stuff like that. But right. But again, that's a very different relationship, right? We were all friends. I can't imagine a sibling and somebody that you know so well.
Right. Right. And, you know, but then it also is because she was special needs, you know, it's not, it, you know, I thought about that, like, it's just not a similar situation as other people that might have lost a sibling, you know, so that
right
makes it different.
No, but that's
I would say, like, it definitely, you know, I do think some families, when they lose a child, you know, major divorce and all that stuff, and that did not happen with our family.
No, it's awesome that you had the support system around you to right. help.
Right. You know, we'd lived in the same house for 8-9 years. We had a lot of neighbors we were close to. So we had, within Naperville, there was a lot of people that, you know, got us through that.
No, that's cool. So after
that was like, you know, 7th, 8th grade, high school, I was involved in a lot of activities. You know, one thing, and, you know, I kind of mentioned this a bit earlier, I guess one regret from high school is a lot of time spent trying to get the cool kids to hang out with me and not, you know, not really being grateful for the friends I had, not maybe sort of, maybe I'll hang out with you all. I want to see what other options come up first, you know. So I that is sort of, you know, as I mentioned earlier, that's probably one story of high school that I regret and wish I had done differently. Just really been wiser about, you know, who I should pursue friendships with, but also be much more grateful about the people that wanted to hang out with me and not always try and do, you know, be social climbing.
Why do you think that's such a common thing for people to either want to be like someone that they think is cool or that they want to spend time with someone that they think is cool?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's so funny. There is one kid who, you know, he wasn't ever, you know, no one was ever bullying to me, but no, he never made any real effort to be friends with me. But then, like, after college, he called me a bunch and I was like, wait, like, you blew me off in high school and now we're hanging out, you know, but what causes that? I don't know. Probably just insecurity thing.
Did he need a kidney? Is that what it was? He was calling you?
Probably what's coming. I mean, I don't know. I think it's, you know, probably just insecurity. I think everyone to some extent feels they're not cool enough, not popular enough. And then they're hoping that, you know, if XYZ person hangs out with them, then it'll change. And I mean, even the same with women. I, you know, basically blew off some women who now I see them and they're stunning. They're doctors and all that. But because they like weren't part of the cool kids, cool, I was like, nah, I'm going to go pursue this cool girl that's not interested in me. So I think, you know, I certainly had friends in high school, but I think that was definitely a regret of high school. Just, you know, too much time spent pursuing friendships with people that didn't really care one way or another.
Yeah, I think it's natural for everyone to kind of have some of those regrets of high school or even, you know, going into college. But I also acknowledge the fact that in high school, I mean, you're so young, right?
And right.
Hormones are probably controlling you more than your brain is. And
yeah, absolutely.
And I don't remember ever thinking that there were cool kids, but I do remember being jealous of certain groups because they seem to all know each other and all live around each other and all kind of be in that ecosystem.
Was your high school majority white or was it pretty racially diverse?
Oh, it was majority white. And a lot of the kids that I looked at and saw that all lived around each other or knew each other. I mean, they all lived in like nicer neighborhoods.
Right.
And me being the immigrant that I am, we lived in a very poor section of town. Uh-huh. So there was just no way that I could ever be friends with them because they would all, you know, have Xbox Live and have a nice house and they would have people over because they can fit more than 10 people into their house. Meanwhile, I'm in a 2-bedroom apartment with 5 people in it and I'd be lucky to fit in 3 people, right?
Right. I mean, it's just, you know, I certainly felt because my family did not have, you know, we grew up and I look at it in hindsight, like so comfortable, but because we didn't have Colorado ski trip money, you know, I thought we were poor or whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Surroundings. And yet, this family at our church, super wealthy, lived in a huge mansion, and like they didn't give the slightest hoot about money. Their three kids, like they basically all do like social work type jobs, and like they live in a huge house, but they don't really buy much, and they're like they donate most of their money. You know, it's like it's just crazy that people that some of the people that do have a ton of money like care about it a lot less than the people who are merely, you know, middle class or whatever. It's fascinating, certainly.
Yeah. So the last person, my friend Luis, the last person that was on the podcast, he actually owns his own company and he does financial advising. So he plays, I don't want to say plays, but he invests his customers' money.
Right.
And he was telling me that he heard a CEO talk about three levels of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is when you don't care how much your meal cost. That's your first level of being wealthy. Your second level is I don't care about my monthly bills because I know I can afford them,
mm-hmm.
like rent, mortgage, all that stuff. Who cares? And then the third one was fuck you money. Basically, it doesn't matter. Nothing matters. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
But while that is seemingly true, I also would have to say that for those that don't have a lot of money, every penny counts.
Exactly.
And you want more of it, right? And it can bring happiness because then you feel more comfortable. You feel more secure.
For sure.
And once you are, and I don't want to say that that family that lived in a mansion or in a large house, you know, inherited money or anything like that. But if you're born into that, then all of a sudden money kind of just doesn't bring happiness, right? It's about self-fulfulfment.
Absolutely.
And I do think that while money isn't necessarily, you know, the source of happiness, money can bring happiness.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And it's sort of like, where's the line, you know? That the first
right.
thing you talked about, the three levels, and the first one's the restaurant. That reminds me of a joke Adam Carolla told. He said, growing up, I was too poor to go to Outback Steakhouse. Now I'm too rich to go there.
I'm in that same spot now. I mean, I remember in college, I was like, oh my God, we're going to splurge. We're going to go to Applebee's. We're going to get a meal. And now I'm like, why the hell would I ever go to Applebee's?
Yeah. You better not. I guess that's one sponsor you're never going to have, but.
Oh yeah. Also, Applebee's is great. So come on and sponsor the
good in the neighborhood.
Yeah,
it is. It's wild. I have something I sort of just call the Chipotle litmus test, where like a lot of people that make 140K go to Chipotle for lunch, and a lot of people that make 40K go to Chipotle for lunch, and it's fascinating how much more and how much less a meal at Chipotle means to two people next to each other in line.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I'm that's kind of how I am with McDonald's.
Mm.
I grew up eating McDonald's. It's a cheap meal. It's also a guilty pleasure of mine.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, same thing. I mean, now that I'm comfortable and I live in New York City and I don't need to eat quote unquote cheap fast food, I still go in there.
Right.
And I still enjoy the hell out of it. But it's not because I need to save money, but it's just a simple pleasure.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's something, you know, that's certainly something we share, you and I, for those listening, you know, an background and an interest in Mexico. Obviously, Pablo with his family heritage. And with me, it was just kind of an interest that developed in high school. I got really, Spanish class came really easily. And then I started watching some like movies I liked. You know, I spent a summer in college in a smaller Mexican town. And then I spent a couple years in grad school in Mexico City from like 2009 to 2011. And, you know, of course, the question I got from everyone, all the other students in my program, they were all pretty much, you know, upper middle class. But all their questions, why'd you come to Mexico? You know, we're all trying to get into grad schools in America. What are you doing here? I got that. But it's so fascinating how the Mexico that I experienced, it was basically, you know, some version of sort of the Fantasyland Mexico, where, you know, I got to know some wealthy people and they would take me to their parents' beach house and all that. And it's just so fascinating. Something that, you know, I've gotten a lot of pleasure from, you know, Mexico. It's something that also millions of people have had to escape for reasons of severe poverty. So I guess,
right,
you know, your parents, they've been here, what, 30 years now, maybe, or longer?
Yeah. So I moved here when I was about seven or, yeah, around seven. So we've probably been here for almost 30 years. Yeah.
Do you think which country do you think they identify more with now, Mexico or America?
Oh, man.
What a question.
I could talk to you about this for 3 hours. They, without a doubt, take pleasure in saying that they are American citizens.
Awesome.
So they are balls deep into the Americana, like pro-America, America, right, number one. Yeah, they're balls deep in that.
Yeah, and you know, you certainly saw that in the election. A lot of, so a surprisingly high number of Latinos voted Trump. You know,
yeah. So from 2016 to 2020, Trump increased his support among Black people, Hispanic people, and Asians.
Right.
What does that tell you?
I mean, I think it tells you there's a lot, you know, America's got a lot to work at, but it's also a country where a lot of people are trying to immigrate. And I think a lot of people who grew up here comfortably take a lot of it for granted. You know, it's a
tough, oh, yeah,
say America needs to do better, but we also like live pretty great. That's people are tough at juggling two sides. That's what you have. You kind of the pro-America crowd, and then you have the woke crowd on the left. Say, like, you know, yeah, I mean, America, one thing that's awesome is there's 40, 50 cities in America where you can be a nurse practitioner and make $100,000. You know, that's crazy. I mean, look at countries like South Korea. Pretty much the whole country revolves around Seoul, and you got to live there in a tiny apartment if you want to have a decent career. You know, Mexico, it's got maybe 3 or 4 or 5 cities, but, you know, for the most part, if you want to be a strong professional, you have to be in 1 or 2 cities.
Mm-hmm.
America's got 10 or 15 cities that are great if you want to be a up and coming coder, you know, so, you know, there's a lot of great about America and a lot that we can try to fix, but it is, going back to the earlier point, that is fascinating to hear your parents have really embraced it, even though it's, you know, required a lot of hard work on their part. But
I was going to say, I don't think it's a requirement to pick a side, right?
Uh-huh.
You can love this country and literally brag about it, but at the same time, join, you know, some nonprofit to go help lower income people, right? Because it still has a lot of problems.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think that's where I usually end up is, I get in trouble with both sides because my right-wing friends, when I tell them everything that needs to be fixed and everything that's wrong, they're like, oh, well, if you don't like it, then move out of here, right?
Right.
And then my left-wing friends, I can sit here and be like, dude, America's the greatest country ever. And they're like, oh, well, you don't know about the problems. And it's like, ugh, why not embrace all of it and be proud to live in a great place?
Mm-hmm.
Where we do have the opportunity to fix a lot of these problems, right?
Right. Yeah, and it's just, you know, it's good and bad, but I think ultimately, you know, I'm very fortunate, and I think you'd feel the same way, that you can be born here, especially because, it, you know, if you want to spend time in other countries, being an American, you know, opens doors to allow you to do that.
How did you feel in Mexico? How did the people treat you? Because you were there for, what, 3 years?
2 years, yeah, like 2009 to 2011. Perfectly fine. I mean, never felt, but again, I just didn't have the most prototypical Mexican experience. I lived in a trendy young professional neighborhood, and, you know, I didn't have any kids and no family, you know, and I was just living off, I got a really generous scholarship, so I didn't really have to worry about money while I was there. You know, I had a pretty easy life, and that's why, like, you know, and I think it's like this with a lot of lower income. And I think Mexico is not truly a poor country. I'd call it kind of middle income country. But most countries on earth, even ones that struggle financially, have a few neighborhoods that are super well off, you know?
Yep.
I had more because of the very low cost of labor in Mexico, I had more kind of luxurious experiences there than I ever had growing up in a well-off suburb. You know, before Uber, one of the most eye-opening experiences was 1 or 2 a.m. at a bar. We weren't sure, oh, anyone want to call a taxi? And one girl's like, oh, I'll just call my family chauffeur, you know. I'm a broke grad student, and I'm getting chauffeured home in a nice town car, you know.
Unreal.
So that's, you know, I had a very fantasy land experience in Mexico. As far as why I think it's great, of course, the beaches, you know, and stereotypes are often right. I could be in a crazy urban city like Mexico City. In 3 hours, I could be at a gorgeous beach near Acapulco. You know, people have to plan for months for an Acapulco vacation from America. For me, it was just a weekend affair, and I found a decent $30 hotel, you know. So the beaches were stunning. The weather's great. The street food is outstanding.
Did you ever get sick eating the street food?
Absolutely, yeah. And just like, I went to a really fine dining establishment. Hooters. That's right, Hooters. Watching football, and I drank the ice water that, you know, they put on the table and got rather sick from that. So sure, I got sick. Not as much after the first couple months. And what was really cool, you know, people don't, you know, a lot of life, like we said, there's good and bad, two-way streets. You know, a lot of my closest friends were other young professional Americans in their mid-20s in the same boat as me. A lot of people on Fulbright scholarships. So a couple of people from my undergrad in Chicago that were there. So I had half of my friends were Mexicans, again, from kind of more upper middle class backgrounds. Half were other Americans. We had both the Thanksgivings I was there one time. You know, I went to an English speaking church there, so we had a big Thanksgiving dinner. Another year, the Americans our age hosted Thanksgiving. I had a lot of fun experiences. It was great.
Did you guys eat tacos for Thanksgiving?
No, we did the old fashioned stuff. There's an American guy there who owns a barbecue restaurant, but next week he's selling like you can take it home, you know, American Thanksgiving meal. And that's what I wrote my master's thesis on, was the American experience in Mexico. The main kind of, one of the main department stores was founded by Americans. When I was there most recently, you know, you go to some of the trendier neighborhoods and it's all American tourists. I mean, of course, you know, you have the Denzel Washington movie, Man on Fire, all about the kidnapping epidemic in Mexico.
Right.
I think that was more of like an early 2000s thing. It's not as much of an issue the last 10 years. Fortunately for Mexico City, the drug wars pretty much stayed out of Mexico City. You know, the last 10 years, a lot of luxury travel magazines and websites have written about Mexico City. So it's, you know, you'll find a lot of trendy European and American tourists there in Mexico City nowadays. Again, it's heartbreaking how there's certain, the city of Morelia in southwest Mexico, state capital, gorgeous old cathedral. None of us should be visiting there. It's just not safe. My college 15, 20 years ago had an exchange program there. We don't anymore. So sadly, because of the drug war, you know, a great deal of Mexico is much more unsafe than it used to be. But Mexico City itself is a very trendy cosmopolitan city. So I just love, it was fun. It was kind of a 2-year vacation. It was fun. And I made 4, 5, 6 great friends I stay in touch with. And it was great. And the fact that I can just go there and travel around Latin America and speak Spanish well enough to get around is a blessing. So that's great. It was fun. And yeah, I'm very glad I did that.
It's amazing that you got to do that, because I know a lot of people would never take the plunge.
Right.
To experience something like that. And two, some of the people that do want to have that experience aren't able to, right? So
right.
You were able to do it, and you had the balls to go out and say, you know what, Mexico for 2 years, let's do it.
Yeah, and certainly tough at times, loneliness. You know, I had classes at night, didn't always have a lot to do or people to hang out with during the day. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm very glad I did it. I've been in the workforce for about 10 years since various consulting firms. And, you know, I'll be blunt. I have not hit a home run. I've not found the one company that I thrive with. I've been with my current one a year and a half now. It's going well. But I think, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the most surprising thing to me about the workforce that I'm much more adjusted to now than I was 10 years ago is, unless you're starting your own business or kind of on your own in some way, so much of what you do in work is do exactly what you're told to do. My current boss is super friendly, but my entire day, every single day, is she IMs me once an hour, tells me what report to make, I make it, she IMs me again, and that's fine. You know, my lot, like, I sit in my Phoenix apartment in air conditioned, listening to music and working, and I look to my
right
and I see construction workers in 115 degree heat working in the summer. And you know, so I know I'm super grateful for my current job. Hope to kind of start moving up the management ranks in the years ahead. But again, that's been an adjustment. I certainly think, you know, with school, it's like, all right, you get an assignment in class, you got 4 days to do it. In the workforce, you get an assignment, you have 40 minutes to do it, you know? So, I mean, that's been a challenge of mine that I've been trying to continue to work at, is when I get a task, getting on it right away, because that's something I've struggled at and I'm trying to get better at. But I think it's, you know, important to acknowledge your shortcomings and say that, hey, this is a weakness of mine, I'd like to get better at it, and, you know, go from there.
That's awesome that you do that, because I am still in that college mindset. So whenever I get a project, I don't think, hey, I need to knock this out. I think, all right, what did I do in college? Oh yeah, I would go to McDonald's, I would go out, I would go do whatever. Uh-huh. And then last minute procrastination.
Yeah, man, I had a lot of work to do yesterday on a Sunday afternoon because of that. To be fair, I was super this was like a side gig for my job. I was super busy last week, so I couldn't do my side gig. So that was, it was very college-esque, doing work at 10 p.m. on a Sunday night.
Oh, man, I remember those nights. Yeah, no, it's...
But today was chill. Today was a very normal work day. I worked from like... I woke up at 6:30, took a walk, worked from like 7:15 to 4, and then just went to the gym. So today was great. And the rest of, you know, tomorrow, the rest of the week's looking great. So I'm very, you know, I'm well aware that there are immigrants who work 16, 18 hours a day at a bread factory, you know, killing themselves. And I'm very aware how lucky I have it to be able to sit at my desk, and definitely very grateful for that aspect of my life right now.
No, and it's really good that you recognize that. I recognize that, because growing up, my parents had the shittiest jobs.
Right.
I, growing up, had pretty shitty jobs. And I know what the income levels are for all of those shitty jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I am grateful for is, during this pandemic, is that I don't have to work those shitty jobs where, one, you're not getting paid enough. Two, you would probably get laid off immediately as soon as the pandemic hit.
Right, right.
And three, even if you do survive and have to work, you're putting yourself in danger, and you might, if you're lucky, you might make an extra dollar an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, people, it's easy to sit down and bitch about your job or bitch about something silly, or, oh man, I can't go to the bars after 10 p.m. What the fuck?
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, you have to recognize that there are also real issues out there.
No, I'm so fully aware of that. It's, you know, maybe the richest man on earth, Warren Buffett, said basically the same thing. But the main reason I am where I am is because I was born in a two-parent married household, white, in Naperville. My dad had an engineering degree from maybe the best engineering school in the world, Purdue, you know. That explains so much of my success. I guess one thing that's, you know, I'm fascinated by your story is, because you didn't grow up in a household of parents with, quote, office jobs, professionals, an elitist word, we'll say office jobs, computer-focused jobs, because you didn't grow up around that, did you have to seek that out, or did it just sort of happen naturally? You know, because you see that in New York. Well, I'm an iBanker because my dad's an iBanker. I'm a lawyer because my dad was a lawyer. You know, your situation is obviously, you know, you purely from an income level, or certainly at a higher income level than your parents were. So is that, did it happen naturally, or did you have to seek that out?
I never imagined in my wildest dreams that I would be where I am today.
Right.
I never seeked it out. And I mean, everybody that knows me will tell you that I am probably one of the luckiest people ever.
Yeah.
As in, I literally fall into good opportunities and I fall into the hands of good people. And I acknowledge that I myself have not done anything out of this world. I have not done anything spectacular to deserve where I am. It is simply opportunities that have come and that I have been fortunate enough to walk through. And in respects to my parents not having desk jobs, that was probably the biggest hurdle for me mentally, because when I finished high school, I had no intentions of going to college.
Well, that's crazy, because where I grew up, it was 100% opposite.
Mm.
How did you end up going to college then?
My parents literally forced me to go.
Okay.
They told me, if you don't go to college, then you're going to start paying rent. You're going to have to like pay your fair share of the groceries. You're going to have to do this. You're going to have to do that.
Right.
We're not going to support you. And I was working already, right? I started working, I think, when I was like in eighth grade.
Uh-huh.
So for me, it's like, okay, well, I'm already working. If I, now that I'm finishing high school, that means I can work even more. And if I work more, that means more money.
Right.
And, God bless my parents, man, cause I put them through hell a billion times, but they literally told me, no, you have to at least take some classes at community college. So that's what I did.
Right.
And
so was there a point when you're like, oh, okay, I'm glad I'm not digging ditches. I'm glad I'm moving towards the office route. Was there an age when that happened?
Maybe my second to last year of college, because I actually ended up going to college for 8 years. But I think it was the second to last year when I started my quote unquote university,
right,
that it kind of hit me like, oh shit, I'm going to a university, this is really cool, I'm gonna party and then I'm gonna come out and get a good job, right? And that's when it kind of started to hit me. But the reality of actually getting a desk job didn't hit me until the last semester, I think.
Okay.
Then I started to notice that while I was having fun and enjoying the college experience, everybody else had internships. And I'm like,
what's an internship?
Right. I was like, I've been working at a grocery store. I've been working at a pizza joint. I've been working at a restaurant. What do you mean you guys are getting paid to go downtown at a Bank of America office or a Wells Fargo office, right, or an actual, you know, corporation office and get work experience and get paid, right? Like, that didn't compute. And so, you know
what I love about office jobs? Nights and weekends off. Like, I'm a very creature of habit. Like, I love knowing that, like, hey, I'm going to be free after 7 and I'm going to be free pretty much every Saturday and Sunday. And that's dope.
Yes. I remember so many times where I would have to close a pizza shop on a Saturday or on a Sunday.
At like 3 or 4 a.m.
Yeah, and it depends, right? Because if you work in the university area, without a doubt, you're going to be staying up late.
Right.
Grocery stores, you get better hours because they close at a certain hour. No, but yeah, I mean, look, I've said this a million times. I'm lucky where I am, and I do not take for granted the desk jobs that I've had or maybe will have. Because like you said, the benefits, you get nights off. You get the weekends off. A lot of these bigger companies. Pay holidays, 401k match.
Paid vacations, you know.
Paid vacations. I mean, the benefits are there.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's something I just definitely saw in you, is even if a manager would frustrate you, you weren't confrontational solves nothing, you know. Right. You know, like we all do, complain over beers. That's healthy. That's normal. Yep. you never were confrontational, and because of that, you know, you did well. And I think so many people can't control their temper that way, you know, and they get stuck in their careers because they let their anger get the best of them.
Yeah, I think emotional intelligence is actually one of the biggest, one of my biggest strengths, and something that I notice in almost any job, where if you can control your emotions and know how to deal with people, if you know how to deal with people's emotions and needs and desires, that's what managers do, right? They're good at kind of controlling that scenario and putting a resolution to whatever the issue may be.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
It's, so I guess one thing I'm curious, and we'll kind of get wrapping up, and I'll answer this too. I'd love to hear your answer though. Where do you, as cheesy as it is, outside of work, what's something that like you hope you spend a lot of time doing in the next 5 years?
Something that I want to be doing.
Not necessarily accomplished, but.
But actually actively do it.
Right.
One, this podcast.
Awesome.
You are guest number 14, I believe. Great. And there has not been a guest that comes on that doesn't at least teach me one thing, whether it's a perspective or a new viewpoint or simply a fact, right? I am so fortunate to have met so many great people in my lifetime that I love to just chat with them, give them the platform to tell their story, their viewpoints, their ideas. And I hope that I'm doing this a lot in the next 5 years. And I think the other thing is doing more stand-up comedy.
That sounds scary, man. Scary.
Trust me, I almost never did it. I took a course, and the course is not even a course. It's a workshop. So you show up and they're like, all right, get up on stage, say something. And I was like, wait a minute, this is not what I signed up for. I wanted somebody to teach me, not push me onto a stage and do it, right? And I vividly remember the second class, because our class was so big, not everybody got to go up and present their material. On the second day, I literally thought I could literally just go to the bathroom and just not go back in. And then that way, nobody will know who I really was. I'm okay losing the money.
Right.
I just don't like, there's 20 strangers in this little room and you want me to go up there and do stand-up comedy when I've never done it before. But thank God my balls dropped before that happened, because I went up, performed, and afterwards we all got a beer and they were like, dude, that wasn't half bad. Like, how long have you been doing this? And I'm like, hey, that's literally my very first time. So I got to perform. I've done a couple of open mics. I had shows lined up before COVID hit, and it was just an amazing experience. And if I can continue to do it, even if I never become famous, if I can just continue to do it, meet new people, make people laugh, just have something to kind of release energy and positive vibes, I'm all in on that.
Right. That's awesome.
And for yourself?
I think just continue to take better care of myself. It's never fun to admit things that we screwed up on, but you know, it's healthy to do, and it takes courage, you know.
Right.
2011, you know, 2010 to 2020, I probably gained 100 pounds, and you know what? I'm very much like a data numbers driven person. That's a pound a month. It is not hard to gain a pound in 1 month. It happens. It can happen so sneaky. And it's just the cumulative effect. You know, over the last year, I've lost 20 pounds. And I think one thing I'm trying to focus on now is that I do not need to lose 80 pounds in the next 4 months.
Right.
I can lose 1 to 2 pounds for the next 5 years. That's losing a pound a month is super doable and it's reasonable. And that's kind of my mindset. It's like, what can I do to lose 1 to 2 pounds a month for the next 5 years and get back to a healthy weight? And it doesn't. Let's set realistic goals so that the likelihood of success. And it's just, Like right now, it's just little stuff. Like, don't, if you want junk food, like make yourself walk to the grocery store to Circle K to get it. Don't leave any in your house. You know, like I there's been so many times, it's 9 p.m. Screw it. I don't want to go out to get junk food. So I just won't eat anything. You know, so it's just, and you can save a pound a month doing that, you know. It doesn't have to be a massive transformation. It can just be little smaller changes. So that's one thing. And I'd just love to take, if over the next 5 years, if I can take like 3 great trips with at least one other person. I've done a lot of solo stuff in my life, like during, you know, moved to Mexico, but went to all my friends went to University of Illinois. I went somewhere else. You know, went to Mexico by myself, went on a big Euro trip by myself, moved to Phoenix by myself. But I, you know, the best moment of 2020 for me was one of my best friends' weddings right before COVID went crazy in South Africa. And I'd never, you know, spending 6 days in a group of like 12 people was pretty foreign to me. I usually, I'm the type of person, I'll spend 2 hours a day with other people and then the rest by myself. So to be around others all day, you know, not something supernatural to me, but it was great. And so I like, again, realistic goals. I'm not saying I'm going to take a million trips with friends, but how about by like next fall 2021, I'll take one trip with even just one friend, even if it's a 3-day trip, you know? So I'd love to do some traveling with friends. And absolutely a serious, you know, I'd love to be married 5 years from now. We'll see what happens, but that's definitely, you know, the mindset. So we'll see. But, you know, happy with how life's gone. And I feel like, certainly fortunate and feel like things are on the right track. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you have goals and you are very self-aware of everything that is around you, which is excellent. I think that's an excellent recipe for success. A lot of the times people don't have any goals or aren't aware of their flaws. And so they don't work on them. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you have both acknowledge some of your shortcomings and are setting goals, clear goals of what you want. I think you're going to have nothing but success moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Today, for whatever reason, I woke up super low energy and I ate like crap today, but at least I was aware of what was going on. And since the last 4 hours, I was like, all right, it's just because you've eaten like crap before 5 p.m., you can still eat healthy in the evening, you know. You don't have to sell the day short, sell the week short because you had one bad day, you know.
Exactly. No, there's always going to be those days where you take a loss, but you get back up, right?
You can have a fresh start at any moment of the day.
Absolutely. Yep. And that's something that I try to think about when it comes to like New Year's resolutions. It's like, why wait till New Year's?
Right. Absolutely.
If you see a problem, say, hey, you know what? Today I'm going to take step one and get the ball rolling, you know? Mm-hmm. No, but that's awesome, man. I'm happy to see that you're happy and that and you're being successful, man.
Cool. Well, if you ever want to come out to Arizona, we got a space for you, man.
Oh, absolutely, dude. I might take you up on that offer in the spring.
Hopefully if things get more chill.
Oh, dude. Yeah, this is going to be a crappy winter, but I'm sure by the time that we hit summer,
April, May,
life will be so much better.
Awesome.
I get that feeling. Well, thank you so much for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
It's been a lot of fun. Thanks.
I'll talk to you later.
Bye.